we come from and why are we here? Or put it another way, what's the origin and meaning of life? Where did everything that we see and hear and touch and smell come from? And where do we fit into it all? That's a big question, isn't it, to start our series with. Maybe one that we don't spend a lot of time thinking about because we are, let's face it, all caught up in the busyness of the whirlwind of life. But the answer to this question does have huge implications for the whole way that we approach and think about our lives. So it's actually a great question to start our series with. It goes without saying, I think, that different people have different ideas about where life comes from. But I thought it would be good not to start with our differences. Why don't we begin by focusing on something that pretty much everyone agrees on? I thought that would be nice. Something that everyone agrees on, whether they're a scientist or not, whether they would say they believe in God or not, or they're undecided. One thing that pretty much everybody agrees on is this, that the universe had a definite start, a moment of beginning. Now, many scientists would say that the best explanation of this moment of beginning is the Big Bang Theory. The idea that a long, long time ago, as we heard explained very eruditely there, a long, long time ago, the universe exploded out of a small, dense, very hot point of matter, expanding and cooling as it did so, until eventually all that energy began converting into subatomic particles that formed the building blocks of stars, planets, elements, and all matter. Now, others would hold slightly different views. Some that there were a number of big bangs and big crunches. Others that there was one definite moment of beginning, but it was initiated by something other than a cosmic explosion. However, I think regardless of which explanation you would subscribe to, most everyone agrees that the universe had a definite start. So I think the question that follows from that, whatever your position, is this. What caused the beginning of the universe and life? People have been trying to work this out for hundreds, thousands even, of years, which I think makes it all the more surprising that even after all this time, there are really only three types of explanation that have been credibly put forward to answer this question. And these three explanations are this. First of all, the random chance single universe theory. Secondly, the multiverse theory. And thirdly, the creator God theory. Now, you're sitting this morning in a church at a Christian event, so I don't think it's going to come as a great shock to you or to any of us as to which theory I believe best explains the answer to this question. But that doesn't mean this morning I'm going to be rubbishing anyone else's ideas or dismissing out of hand the convictions of others. My aim simply this morning is to lay out the three alternatives for you and invite you to draw your own conclusions. But before I do that, we are going to have a short time of worship, an opportunity for those of us who believe in God to express how great and amazing we found him to be. So as I said, please feel free to join in, participate, or just observe as you feel most comfortable. During the first song, there's going to be an opportunity for those who want to bring their giving as part of their worship. And shortly after that, there's going to be the notice coming up for our young people and children to go out for their time together. So I'm going to hand over to Penny and the band now. Thank you. Thank you, Penny. So, how might we explain the formation of the universe and the beginning of life? I wonder if we could have the screen up. Thank you. Well, the first possible answer to this question is the random chance single universe theory. In other words, luck. That our universe and life in all its forms is one very big, fortunate cosmic accident. This theory states that there was a Big Bang. We don't know why, but that the resulting universe was so vast that was formed that it was bound to produce life somewhere and sometime. This theory says it was just random luck, so there's no point trying to conjure up a more complex theory. Now, whilst this might seem like a conveniently simple explanation at first, as soon as you start to dig into the science and the mathematics behind it, you discover actually that as an explanation goes, it's neither simple nor convenient. The scientific research tells us that for stars and planets to be formed, let alone stars and planets that will support and sustain life, there are 15 constants or numbers that have to be exactly right and in perfect balance. In other words, the conditions required to form a universe and for life to be sustained are extremely delicate and precise, and that any slight deviation in any of those 15 constants means that life simply can't exist. The constants, I'm sure you'll know this, but they're things like the amount of usable energy in the universe, the strong and weak nuclear forces, the amount of gravity, the size of the universe, and so on. 15 things that have to be exactly right for a life-supporting universe to come into being. And if any of these numbers is as much as one part in a million wrong, life can't exist or be sustained. So, what are the chances of this happening randomly? Well, perhaps it might help you to think of it like this. Think of 15 massive roulette wheels. Now, I'm not sure how many numbers a normal roulette wheel has, probably about 40. But try and imagine 15 massive roulette wheels where there are a million different numbers on each. And each one of these roulette wheels represents one of the 15 constants that have to be in place and perfect balance for the universe to come into being. Now, imagine the first wheel, if you can, representing, let's say, the gravity constant, spinning round this vast wheel, a million numbers, and the ball bouncing past all the hundreds and thousands of different alternative numbers and landing on exactly the right one for our universe to be the way it is. Wow, what are the odds of that? Well, it's one in a million. But great, life is still possible at this point. Then imagine the second wheel, again with a million numbers. Let's say that represents the strong nuclear constant. And imagine that spinning. And again, the ball bouncing past all the million different alternatives and landing once again on exactly the right number. Outrageously long odds, you might say, but so far, so good. Now imagine this happening 14 times perfectly. Each one a one in a million shot before you get to the 15th wheel. And the ball bounces around all the hundreds and thousands of alternatives and lands exactly next to the right one, and the entire universe collapses and implodes. What are the odds of all 15 constants being exactly right when being different one part in a million causes everything to collapse? Well, before I tell you what the odds are, let me just put it in context. What are the odds for winning the lottery? Anyone got any ideas? I'll tell you, it's 1 in 14 million, okay? So I don't know whether you play the lottery, whether you think that's good. Odds, what are the odds? Well, I put 1 in 10 million, but actually it's 1 in 14 million. Pretty long odds, but random things happen, don't they? Someone wins the lottery, so random things are possible. What do you think the odds of being struck by lightning 2 days in a row are? Okay? You know, I think pretty unlucky if you get struck by lightning once. But what are the odds of getting struck by lightning 2 days running? Well, they're this, apparently. 1 in 10 to the power of 16. I don't know what that is. Million, trillion, billion. Yeah, pretty outrageously long odds. So if you've been struck by lightning today, sleep easy in your bed tonight, because the chances are it won't happen tomorrow. What are the odds of all 15 constants in the universe being exactly in perfect balance, randomly coming into being, for the universe to be existed as it does to sustain life? Those are the odds, science tells us. 1 in 10 to the power of 900 of all those 1 in a million shots coming to pass. So we have to ask ourselves, do we think that's possible? A universe so staggeringly suitable for life coming into being by chance. The truth actually is, in the light of these numbers, there are very few scientists who hold to this theory anymore, believing it's just too unlikely to be a realistic explanation for the origin of the life and universe. Which is why the multiverse theory has been put forward as an alternative. The multiverse theory says this. Yes, the odds of a single life-supporting universe coming into being by random luck are unbelievably minuscule. 1 in 10 to the power of 900. Therefore, the multiverse theory says, it stands to reason that there must be that same number of different universes out there. All separate, all different, but ours, by definition, is the only one where all the constants have come up exactly right so that life exists and is sustainable. Now, it's interesting that as a theory, although it's held by many scientists, this is a theory that isn't scientifically provable, because no one has ever seen or found any evidence for any of these proposed billions of other universes. We found different galaxies, but no universe outside our own. Nevertheless, many scientists hold that it's a much more likely explanation for how our universe is than the random chance single universe theory. Again, we all have to make our own minds up about that. Which brings us to the third possible explanation that many people hold, including a good number of scientists. And that is that the explanation for where the universe and life comes from is the work of a creator God. That the reason that the universe exists in such an intricate and perfect balance to be able to sustain life, and life of such incredible beauty and diversity and order, is because God has designed and created it to be so. It's the explanation that the Bible gives. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And all things, whether visible or invisible, from the hugest star to the tiniest atom, were created by him and for him. Now, many people would simply dismiss this theory as fantasy, as superstition, as unprovable. But as I've already said, we have to be a little bit careful about that, because the multiverse theory, which many would hold in scientific circles as the best explanation for explaining the universe, that's also unprovable scientifically. So what's the proper approach that we should take then when we're faced with two differing theories which may not be provable in the way that many would ideally like them to be? Well, the established method of investigation is to examine the evidence that we have, to look for the theory which we think best explains that evidence, and then carry out further research to see if it supports that theory. So what sort of evidence do we need to examine to weigh our different theories? Well, we've already talked about the intricately finely tuned condition of the universe required to support life, and the mind-boggling odds stacked against its random occurrence. Then there's the conundrum of how can something spontaneously come from nothing? Scientific research shows us that this isn't possible, for something to spontaneously come from nothing. We don't see it occurring anywhere else in nature. So if the universe began with a Big Bang, where did those first atoms and particles come from that exploded out at the moment of the formation of the universe? Next, we have to look at the transformation of our universe from chaos to order, which seems to run contrary to the natural order of everything left to its own devices or chance. Left to their own devices, things in nature tend to get more disordered. So when we find an ugly piece of land with grass overgrown and flowers dying and weeds running wild, we generally conclude, don't we, that no one has been looking after this. I know, I have a garden. If it wasn't for my wife and my in-laws and my family, that's what it would look like. So what are we to think when we look at our world of incredible beauty and order and diversity? How did it come to be this way, to go from chaos to order? Douglas Adams, who's a famous author and a self-proclaimed radical atheist, once said this. He said, "Isn't it enough to see that a garden is beautiful without having to believe that there are fairies at the bottom of it too?" In other words, he argued that just as the right response to seeing a beautiful garden is to appreciate its beauty for its own sake and not feel the need to invent mythical creatures that live there, then surely, He was arguing, it's enough to encounter a very beautiful world filled with incredibly complex life and magnificent creatures without having to invent a god hidden behind it. Now, whilst there is an undeniable logic to the whole beautiful garden and fairies theory, there seems to me a big problem with the conclusion that he draws from that scenario. I agree. A beautiful garden would not make me believe in fairies. I don't know many people who do, with the possible exception of my youngest daughter, Jess. But seeing a beautiful garden does lead me to believe in a gardener. When we see a beautiful garden that was, we know that a skilled and intelligent person has been hard at work, planting, tending, nurturing, pruning, arranging, probably over a long period of time. So what are we to think when we look at our earth, for example, a place that has bucked the natural trend towards disorder, a planet where total chaos has turned into astonishing order and beauty and not the other way round? And what about DNA? Those tiny molecules that carry the different blueprints for all different types of living cells. Where did those first strands of DNA come from? And where did the information that they carry originate? The theory of natural selection, the cornerstone of evolutionary scientific thought, requires that DNA be in existence for mutations and adaptions to come about. And yet the theory of natural selection cannot explain where DNA came from. And what about evolution? Something that's often put forward as evidence against the case for a creator God. It's certainly taught in all our schools as fact, even though it is still a theory, whether you choose to believe it or not. Does the fact that humans share 98% of our DNA with primates actually prove that we're descended from them, or merely prove that a creator God uses the same DNA building blocks in both? A very famous geneticist called Steve Jones said this: a chimp may share 98% of its DNA with humans, but a chimp is not 98% human. It's not human at all, it's a chimp. Does the fact that we have genes in common with a mouse or a banana say anything about human nature? Some claim that genes will tell us who we really are. The idea is absurd, he says. Genetic similarities can be equally the result of design as the result of descent. And lastly, what about things like thought, imagination, concepts of beauty, the creative arts, morality, conscience? Can inanimate matter really produce life that is capable of these things? Can these things really be adequately explained as originating from a mindless jumble of minerals? Or are they much more likely to exist because they are the product of a creator's mind, implanted into men and women made in the Creator's image, as the Bible claims? So which theory do you think best explains this evidence? It's a question that we all have to answer for ourselves. And in a few minutes, I'm going to kind of wrap up this bit of the presentation by asking, what are the implications for these different theories, these different explanations for where the universe and life came from? But before that, we're going to see some images of the incredible beauty and wonder of the earth and hear a song which is one person's response to the beauty that we live in. So which explanation for the existence of the universe and life makes most sense to you? It's my conclusion that the only explanation which truly satisfies the evidence is that of a creator God. Now, you may agree or not, but just suppose for a moment that that's true. What are the implications for our lives? Well, let's flip it on its head for a moment. What if it's not true? What are the implications? Well, it means that we're here by accident. It means that we are just a collection of random DNA, that we are simply the product of an evolutionary conveyor belt in an improbable universe. And I think that's a pretty empty and hopeless thought. If there is a creator God, on the other hand, then surely that changes everything. Surely that changes who we are, and that changes the possibilities of life. The Bible, which clearly supports this view, tells us that we are intentionally, carefully, and lovingly created by God. Each of us individually made by him and known to him. Here's a verse from one of the very famous Psalms. For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. And the Bible tells us that we're not just made to be known by him, but created to know our Creator and to enjoy him and to find in him everything that we need to live life to the full. Our hope, our peace, our strength, and our healing. Here's another verse from the Bible. Long before God laid down earth's foundations, he had us in mind and had settled on us as the focus of his love, to be made whole and holy by his love. Long, long ago, he decided to adopt us into his family through Jesus Christ. The idea not just that God, our Creator, would know us, but that we can know him and enjoy him and live life in relationship with him. The Bible says that God wanted to have a people that he could pour his love and life into, who would love and follow him. And even when we chose a different path, deliberately separating ourselves from him and rebelling against him, the Bible tells us he didn't just abandon us and start again in another universe. God decided to step in instead and rescue us. And he sent Jesus, his own son. The Creator became human, became created, entering into our experience. And 2,000 years ago, lived and died in our place. Stood as a substitute before his Father in heaven on our behalf. And though he was perfectly innocent, shouldered all the guilt and punishment for all that we have done wrong. That verse goes on to talk about the cross that Jesus died on. Because of the sacrifice of Jesus, his blood poured out on the cross, we can be a free people, free of penalties and punishments chalked up by all our misdeeds. It's in him that we find out who we are and what we're living for. Why did Jesus die? The Bible says, so that we could know forgiveness and be restored back into perfect relationship with our Creator. The Bible also says that Jesus didn't stay dead, but he rose again to life. He conquered death so that we could know that death is not the end, but that we can have an eternal destiny in him. And we're going to look at more of that in a couple of weeks' time. The Bible tells us that God made this incredible universe and filled it with light and life to be a reflection of who he is and to bring him praise as a demonstration of his indescribable glory and creativity and power. And the God who made all these things knows you and loves you and invites you to know and love him. Perhaps you believe that. Perhaps you found that to be true for yourself. Perhaps you're here and you're not sure. Perhaps you're here and you're skeptical. Perhaps you'd like it to be true, but it seems just too fantastical to be true. Maybe deep down you do believe it, but you've never pursued it further or realized that you could. Perhaps you feel like you've still got a lot of questions and you'd like some more answers. Well, it's good to have questions. That's why we've put this series together, One Big Question. Actually, most of us have lots of very big questions about life, and it's good to ask them and to look at them together. So I would encourage you, if you're in that category, ask your questions. Investigate. In the Bible, God makes a promise, and it's this. He says, when you come looking for me with all your heart, you'll find me. When you come looking for me with all your heart, you'll find me. So I would encourage you, if you're in that category where you're not sure and you're looking, look for God with all your heart. Keep asking your questions. Talk to God. Pray. That may feel a bit silly if you're not sure if he's really there, but try. Ask him, if you're really there, God, please, will you show me? And keep asking and listen and wait. I would encourage you, keep coming to our One Big Question services. Next month, we're going to be running something called Alpha, A great way of investigating the claims of the Bible is to look at the person of Jesus. Because the Bible says if you want to know about God, you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. And speak to people who say their lives have been changed by God. It's one of the most powerful evidences, I think, that you can find. And we're going to do that right now. So I'm going to invite my friend Clint. He's going to come to the front. And we're going to sit on this lovely sofa here. Because Clint, I know, yes, yeah, come on. Let's see if we can get this mic going. Have a seat, mate.
Okay. That's not too bad, is it?
Could be a little bit more space, but no, not too bad. Not too bad. Thank you, Marsh. So, Clint, you would say, I know, that your life has been changed by encountering God, an encounter you had with God. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that, what your life was like before that and what led up to it.
Okay. I was born in Nottingham in City Hospital. Nice little baby, beautiful. So all children are beautiful, aren't they?
It's hard to imagine, but yeah. No, that's
all right. But unfortunately, my parents spent most of their time working, so they was out all the time, and I was brought up by me mentally ill granddad and my grandma. So by the age of 6 years old, I'd suffered the three abuses, basically sexually, physically, and mentally. So now, and then from 6 years old, we moved to a council estate, got away from the old house, and at that time it was the biggest council estate in Europe. So I'm like this little kid who's really no idea where he's going in the world, doesn't feel safe, unloved. Now I've got to make my way through the educational system. So I did that, managed to scrape my way through, got to about 15 years of age, and I found alcohol. And I found that when I drank a bit of alcohol, I had a lot of confidence. So the alcohol continued, my tolerance went higher and higher. So by the time I was about 18, I was on the football terraces, chanting and worshipping my football team. What a difference it is now. I worship God instead. And then all of a sudden, about 25, 26, someone introduced me to cannabis. And I noticed that cannabis was cheaper than buying all the alcohol that I was drinking. So now I had an alcohol and a drug problem. I lost my first marriage for alcohol and drugs. So everything, I was just one-man demolition thing going through life. And I just couldn't, and all the time I was just looking for love, and I didn't know it, but I was looking for it. And I was trying to find it in relationships, nightclubs, bars, going abroad. And eventually, I met up with some guys who offered me to fly out to South America, basically a drug mule. So I used to fly out to South America, bring drugs back, go to South America, bring back. Then it changed to driving out to Schiphol Airport through Europe, swap bags in the airport, bring it back. And then eventually it became a big container full of cannabis. And I said I didn't want to get involved. But I was already involved in a drug cartel, not with guns or violence from me. But these people said they knew where my family lived. So I thought I better do what they say or sell out my family. So I went ahead. Fortunately, the customs got wind of it and then caught me. And it was really weird at that time. I thought I was something special. I sat there in this police van thinking, oh, look at all these armed guards around. There's an helicopter up there. And was rushed off to the prison. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm something. But the minute them prison gates closed and I looked up at all these lads throwing stuff out the windows, I thought, I've just come into a mental house. I don't know how I'm going to cope with this. Anyway, I did 13 months on remand in there. And then I moved on to a Blunderstone prison with five and a half years to go in prison. And I just thought to myself, I can't cope. Can't cope with this. Because all I'd managed on before was my pride, because that's all I had left, pride and ego. And so I was in this cell, and these two guys who were supposed to be showing me the ropes, they were dealing heroin. I went down to get some food, saw some man get slashed down his face. Then the local psychopath grabbed hold of me with a knife against my throat with his mates and said, they're going to kill me. And so I thought, I'm going to put myself down the block, put myself in solitary and keep out of the way. So I spent 3 months in solitary. Now, for about The first month I did jigsaws and I just read book after book after book. I could even read a book in a day. It was amazing. I'd never done that before, really. And then all of a sudden this darkness started to close in, and it was closing in. And this little voice kept saying, kill yourself, kill yourself. You're worthless, you're useless, you're nothing. And so I planned to kill myself, and I'm not going into detail because I think it's children, but there was the way I was going to do it, I had it planned, waited for the guard. Every 10 minutes they'd come around and check. I waited till he checked, sat on the edge of the bed with all this darkness, and I was just about to do it, and somebody said, pray. And I immediately fell to my knees, and I cried every bad thing I could think of, and I was just shouting out to God, saying, I didn't know I was shouting out to God, but I was just shouting out, saying, I'm sorry, I'm really sorry for this and that and the other. And that took quite a while, because I've had the right. It probably took an hour, I don't know. And all of a sudden, I got a bright light, and I don't know whether the cell was filled with light or my head, but I just got this light, and it just felt so beautiful. And I got back onto my bed, and I laid on the bed, and there, I just got this touch of pure love going all over my body. And I knew from that instant that God and Jesus was real, yet I'd had nobody teach me about it. It just happened. And from there, I went on to Wayland Prison. I became the chapel orderly, and God basically used me as the chaplain, and I was just evangelizing on the, and God was working through there, and lads were coming down, and on the Alpha course, I was praying for people. People were falling on the floor. And so I had all this experience of God. And really, the whole thing about what I'm trying to say is, what I knew at this time is that I was loved. For the first time in my life, I was loved. Even though I couldn't see God, I knew he was there, and I knew I was loved.
Thank you, Clint. That's an amazing story of coming to a very low place and then having that dramatic encounter, which you knew inside that was God, yep. That was Jesus. Yep. How did you then kind of go on and find out more about that? What was it that...
Well, I went on, and then obviously I started studying the Bible, and there was some of them from, you know, Wayland Prison. That was quite funny, because I was reading the Bible, and I went into one chaplain, and I said to him, oh, I said, what does this mean in the Bible? And he turned around to me and said, you don't actually believe it, do you? He said, it's just a job, you know. I was like, okay, all right. And so I continued to read the Bible, and the more I read the Bible, it's like it does, it washes your brain. All the bad things that I've gone through and all the bad thoughts of the world are put in there. The Bible slowly brought me around to see who God is. And now when I'm on my own, we all have dark times. If I'm on my own and I'm really struggling, I know that I can talk to God. And I just talk to God. It's just simple as that. I just talk to him. Even if I'm in tears or struggling, first go to God. And when I go to God, life's good. Because he is good. And God is really faithful. Really faithful. And he never lets us go. Never.
That's great. Thank you, Clint. So, obviously, you know, meeting God just made a huge difference in your life. You know, things have moved on from that time. Do you still need God as much now as you did back then, do you think? Was that just something you needed to help sort you out then? Or is that something that is still as important to you today?
It's more than important. I can't get enough of God, to be honest. I want more and more of God all the time. We think we know who God is, but this just is too huge. None of us can imagine how big God is. And each step of my day is based with God. First thing in the morning now, because without that, I know I'm going to have a bad day.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Clint, for sharing your story with you. Thank you. So I would encourage you, keep asking questions, because we believe that it's possible to meet with God, just as Clint did. Maybe we don't all meet with God in such a dramatic way as Clint did, but actually, any meeting with God is a dramatic thing. We're going to finish our time together with a short time of worship. I hope you've found this morning helpful, you've enjoyed it. Please do come back next week. Please invite friends and family to come along next week. We're going to be looking at the whole question of, if God is love, why does he allow suffering? It's probably the biggest question that we got back when we asked around the community, if you could ask God any question, what would it be? But for now, we're going to have a short time of worship to finish our time this morning. Can I encourage you, if you're in that place of not being sure and being maybe a bit skeptical, maybe still having questions to ask, can I encourage you, even as we worship now, just ask God. You know, if you're really there, would you show yourself to me? Ask him that he would encounter you, because we believe in a God who meets with people. A God who wants to know you, who wants to encounter you, who wants to show you and demonstrate to you that he knows you and he loves you. And one of the ways that we've seen God do this at times is in letting other people know some things that are going on in our lives. It's not a party trick, but it's something that God does sometimes to demonstrate to other people how much he knows and loves them. And as I've been praying this week and just getting ready, I felt God just put a couple of things on my heart, which may be for different people here. And the first one was, you know, we believe in a God who has power and power to heal. And if you're here this morning and you're sick, we would love to pray for you this morning, because we believe God can encounter you and break into your life in power. And as I was praying this week, I felt God saying that there may be someone here this morning who has pain in their foot. It's not a surface kind of skin thing, but actually a very deep pain in your foot, almost a kind of maybe a bone thing. If that's you here this morning, we'd love to pray for you and pray for God to break in with healing power into your life. I also felt this morning when I was praying that there's someone here who's suffering a feeling, a real sense of loss about something at the moment. And it's not actually a physical thing or a person that you're grieving for, but actually it's something that you'd been hoping and holding on for in your life, that you were hoping was going to happen. And yet it seems now that that's not going to happen. And you feel a deep sense of loss, almost grieving in your life. Well, we believe that God has a good and perfect plan for each one of us. And so if that's you this morning, then again, just like to pray for you and just pray for God's peace and pray for God to show and demonstrate his love for you. We're going to worship now. If you feel stirred that there's something God puts on your heart that you feel may be for someone else this morning, can I encourage you to bring that? Marshall, who's sitting here, will just be available here at the front. Just come and have a word with him, and we'd love to share that. So we're going to worship now. I'm going to hand back over to Penny. If you'd like someone to pray with you this morning, we'd love to do that. Please don't feel awkward about that. I know it might seem a little bit strange, but we would love just to pray with you. And there'll be some people who'll just be down here as we worship now who would love to do that. So let's finish our time. If you know God, let's bring him worship and thank him for his goodness in our lives. And let's just ask God that he would meet with us and encounter us even now. Thank you.